right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are the Behind the Mic podcast, and we're glad that you are joining us today. We're going to touch on a topic that everybody says does not mix with...
Don't talk about religion and politics.
Can we talk about religion and politics together?
Yes.
That sounds awesome.
It's kind of the point,
I'm
right?
I'm so stoked.
Yeah, let's do that.
Great.
Let's do that. So, should Christians be involved in politics? Mm. Now, it seems like an obvious answer, but we know that there's a lot of there's a lot of views on this. Politics alone, and then you mix in religion with that, and it's just all over the place. So, we are here to set the story straight.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, because we know.
We got it all figured out.
We know it all.
Yeah, so take some notes.
We don't.
Heavy on the sarcasm.
So, I'm going to start with Dave. Dave, yeah. What kind of, what's your, like, have you had a political moment that just stands out to you?
Okay, yeah, my American political moment was in Pakistan.
American politics.
This is American politics.
Okay.
And I watched President Obama's inauguration in a little Muslim tea shop in Pakistan. It was so weird. They were into it. And you know what was really amazing is that they had so many political opinions and questions for me, and they weren't even like American citizens. It was bizarre. They're just like, did you know Obama's Muslim? It's like this Muslim dude saying this is like, I don't know about that. And then they started, and then they would just go on about like politics. Like, what do you think about Bush? What do you think about Hillary? And it's weird. Every once in a while, this political stuff came up. I think what was difficult about it as a missionary is just like, I'm here representing Jesus, not Bush, you know, not whoever it was.
Yeah.
I actually knew a young, a believer from a Muslim background, and he literally said this to us, that when his kid was bad, he would tuck him in and say to his little, and this is a Muslim background believer, he'd tell his little boy, now you better be good, because we all know that President Bush likes to kill Muslim boys. And I know the American missionary, and he knows Bush, so
sleep
you
tight.
Behave. Yeah, so it's just like, wait, were you threatening?
Wow.
Were you threatening to call me?
Some people threaten with the Santa Claus. Some people threaten with the big white American missionary.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, Dave could call in a drone strike any time he wanted.
Wow.
This is a believer. Yeah, so, uh-huh.
I need to digest that.
That's crazy. I don't think I can top that story.
Well, let's try.
Yeah.
As soon as I knock my mic over. Yeah, let's try and see what you've got. I'm going to struggle too, so it'll give me a little more time.
I think probably one of my earliest political memories is Ross Perot being imitated on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah. There's so many good Saturday Night Live sketches.
Oh, yeah. Back when Dana Carvey did George Bush.
Oh, yeah.
I forget who did Ross Perot. You know, that was the 90, was that 92 or no, 90?
Yeah, I don't remember. We should have Wikipedia'd that.
Yeah, it was 92 because Reagan was up till 88.
Yeah.
And then George H. W. Bush, or H.W. I get confused.
Yeah, H.W.
He was 88 to 92, and then it was Clinton, Perot, and George Bush, the first one. Yeah.
So we're obviously going to lean on Dewey for this topic. my political standout was when Ronald Reagan came to Bowling Green, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he came on the train. It was like, I forget what you call it, but the train rolled up and he stopped and he came out and
whistle stop.
Whistle stop. There you go.
Yeah,
that's
whistle
it.
Stop tour.
Yeah, it was a whistle stop tour. And I take that back. I think that was Bush. Reagan was at the courthouse. But anyway, I saw both of them and it was really cool just to see, you know, the president.
Didn't
in your
George
hometown.
W. Bush fly in to Finley Airport? On Air Force One?
Yeah, he did.
I remember hearing stories about that.
Yeah, because we live right next to the fairgrounds, and it was just a flurry of activity. But yeah, he flew into the little Finley Airport on Air Force One. So And then I was at the airport in Springfield, Missouri, working through college, and one of the presidents flew in too, and we had to walk around Air Force One and got lots of pictures of things I wasn't supposed to. So
that's pretty cool.
Anyway, yeah. So politics is a huge thing, especially right now. I think, I've only been around for 50 plus years, but I think our nation is more divided now than I ever remember it. Not the most divided, but it's very divided right now, and it's kind of centered on, if not politics, political stuff. Like we here in Ohio, we just had the bills issue one and issue two passed, which was abortion mm-hmm. rights or whatever they want to call it, and then there was also the marijuana bill that passed. So we're becoming one of the states that is now becoming the majority, where they are allowing the states to really dictate what happens with abortion and with marijuana. And everybody's got an opinion on that. And even within the issue itself, I know that there are people that are very strong on some things, but not others. So I don't know even where to start on this, but the question I think at hand is, should Christians be involved in politics? And if so, how much should we be involved in politics? So, because we know that Christ is the head of everything that we do. But that leaves a lot of space.
I think one of the most helpful things that I've been thinking about, Abraham Kuyper was a theologian, late 1800s, but he also became prime minister of the Netherlands. And he wrote pretty extensively on the interface of church and state. And he talked about sphere sovereignty.
And so sphere, like circle.
Like
global.
There's a sphere of government, there's a sphere of the church, and a sphere of the family.
Okay.
And so being able to understand those different spheres is important, and understand where government should not infringe upon the sphere of the church, or the church shouldn't infringe upon the sphere of the family, and being able to understand those as sovereign entities. Mm. And so, the whole idea of separation of church and state, which isn't in the Constitution, by the way, it was that idea. It was that the government shouldn't infringe upon the church. Right. And so when that's being written, it's, founders are coming out of a monarchy where you had a lot of the Puritans fighting against this idea of church and state, and the kings were using the state to, and religion to basically manipulate and control people. And it's like, we don't want that.
Right.
And so being able to separate those things has been helpful in my mind to differentiate.
So I think that's really interesting, because as I'm just thinking about it in my own brain, I see it as maybe three spheres. So one is church, mm-hmm. one is state, and the other one is market, right?
Okay.
And so for example, I think today one of the big polarizing things is how the market and the politics are now so much more intertwined than they used to, right? So it's like it's almost like what's the inclusivity rating, right? That you can tag onto a company and you can do certain things to move that rating, and it's constantly this moving target where you're talking about we need to boycott them, or that's a bad company, or that's a bad person, you know.
Oh, and it's really scary when the government starts to do the rating.
Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you have companies, the market, wanting to appease the government. And so that becomes what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, to be fascism, is when you have government and businesses kind of working together to isolate certain things or cancel this. in order to...
Well, that's where it becomes dangerous because it could be used as a tool for the market, right?
Right.
So, for example, like one big one is regulation. Like regulation is important and it's good. However, there's a strategy that you see happening, especially in the tech, right? In tech industry, what you do is, like, for example, let's say you're doing you're doing AI development or something like that. You want to push the envelope, right? And you want to say... Basically, at some point, if you have a lead over others, you want to be able to say to the public and the government, it's like, yeah, we do need oversight. Mm-hmm. We do need regulation, right? Their hope is that the lawyers and the regulation, the laws come in, and that's going to solidify their lead in the technology. Mm-hmm. And where it comes a point where in order to enter into that field, you're going to have so many lawyers, and you're going to have so much... red tape to get through.
So
you're
never
going to be able to compete with them.
Would that be similar to how the monarchies used the church?
Yeah.
You know, before it was like, I'm going to connect, and the church was using the monarchy to basically establish their superiority over other religions, if you will. Yeah. But what happened was a downgrade in theological health, and because you had kings using the church and church using the kings and really, you know, taking advantage of people.
So I wonder if, I mean, I don't know, this is my thesis, right? So I like that Kuiper's sphere sovereignty, and my idea is that there's three, and that maybe there's a principle there, like how should Christians get involved in politics? Probably one would be principle based, which is that we don't play dirty with these different spheres, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
And I would just say that I think that the family would be another sphere. Mm-hmm. I would add that for sure. I think Kuiper, if I remember correctly, Kuiper would say that there was state, church, and family. You're adding market.
Yeah.
But I think there's a place for that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, playing dirty with those spheres, letting them infringe or manipulating. So, you know, what we have to be careful is the government doesn't infringe upon the family would be one clear example where we're blessed in America that if you want to homeschool your children, you have that right. Mm-hmm. And you have that privilege to be able to do so. Mm-hmm. Where there's obviously accountability and certain structure in place with that, but still, families have the sovereignty to be able to dictate how they're going to educate their children.
Where do you draw the line with that? And I think, you know, there are people who believe in small government, you know, government exists just for us. And then we have people that believe the government should control, you know, more than the other. Where do you draw the line with where do my freedoms begin to infringe on someone else or where the government needs to step in? We've talked about gun control, all those hot button topics. Is it right for the government to control firearms or how you school your kids? Because it seems like it's black and white, but then when you really start getting into it, then you start seeing, okay, it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, you know, is there a place where the government has to draw the line? Should they be involved in what your kids are allowed to do for education?
Well, so I wonder if there's an interesting case study in what happened to Ohio not too long ago, because you had an issue one and then you had another issue one, right? Mm-hmm. So the first issue one was regarding, you know, how easy should it be to change the Ohio Constitution?
Right.
Right. Part of the reason why that was pushed forward and an important issue to vote on is because what was seen in the pipeline was one about changing basically abortion rights, which was the second issue one.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because you see people arguing different points, but you know, when you know, like, here, I guess this is more of a question. It seems to me it makes sense to argue for voting one way or another based on principle, like what should a state constitution be? Should it be easy to change? Should it be hard to change? Let's talk about that issue. But when you turn it into, well, this bill is going to come in November And mm-hmm. so you need to vote this way or that way because this is what they, the other side's going to do, whatever mm-hmm. side you're going through. And I heard it on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so it was almost like you should vote this way because that's a strategic step towards taking this. What happens is that your voting or your political involvement is no longer issue-based. Mm-hmm. It's like strategy-based. It's yeah. like we're trying to move in one strategic direction. And so we say, vote here because that domino is going to knock over that domino, which is going to knock over that domino. I wonder if that's not good to make that the reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand the concern, but mm-hmm. make it the reason. Mm-hmm. Like, so for example, and I think it's the same thing with politics attached to personality. How many people are going to vote for or against Trump or for or against Biden based on their character and who they think they are and whether they like them or not.
Right.
But they're going to have no sincere thinking about what are their actual policies, and both of them having time in the White House, what did they actually do?
So yeah. if I understand your question, I'm going to repeat it back. So, yeah. so the idea is what you're asking is, should we spend more time really debating the substance of the bill mm-hmm. or the substance of what that politician stands for in terms of their policies
yeah.
versus getting into what seems to be character assassinations, really logical fallacies.
Identity politics, identity bandwagoning, right? Latching yourself to a personality or a movement yeah. that's somehow organized. And I think this is what's scary. I think it's scary to be principle-based because you know that you have people who disagree with you that are trying to coordinate and work yeah. all these things. But in the end of the day, would you rather have, I don't know, be on the higher moral ground or do you want to play mm-hmm. dirty politics mm-hmm. with the dirty politicians? Yeah. I guess that's my question.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I think on a personal level, that's where we come back to what God's word says is what I need to put first. And that's easier said than done, too, because like you said, all these strategies that are going on, well, if you believe this, then you want to vote this way. Mm-hmm. And you're not focused on the actual topic at hand or the issue. You're focused more on the strategy. What's the big long-term outcome of this? But I think it's where you come back to this. And I've always looked and said, you know, if all of us in this room at a church on a Sunday morning, if all of this church believe this, then we should all be voting the same way, right? And that's not the case. Mm-hmm.
But there should be certain things. I just wonder if certain things and this is where I think the spheres can be helpful. It's like abortion. Like, you know, like that's a no-brainer. Because we're talking about a theological question. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an image of God kind mm-hmm. of question. It's not a political kind of question.
Yeah, it's ethical.
It's ethical. It's spiritual. And so the church, that's the realm that mm-hmm. we need to have a say in. Yeah. What happens a lot of times is I see government trying to infringe upon those ethical, spiritual questions mm-hmm. or the pundits trying to pontificate on these things and then do what you're talking about, make it about a side or, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, you don't really understand what you're saying because you're arguing something that you don't have a foundation for.
Right.
And so, I don't know if that's a clear statement, but I think that you have this blending of those spheres, and that's where I think a lot of issues start to arise.
So I think it's particularly tough because, you know, look at the Bible storyline. Where's the period of history where God's people were a world power and they actually had leadership? Like, you don't have a lot of good, you have leadership principles in Scripture.
Sure.
But you don't have good like lessons or principles on like how to run a country. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't. And you go like, oh yeah, but what about King David? It's like, yeah, but God was kind of like, why are you asking for a king? I am your king. What? Fine. You want to be like the other nations? Fine. You know, here's first Saul, now David, and it's a, you know, picture of Jesus, all that good stuff. But it's like it was based on a concession. It was like God's design was for them to be this agrarian society that loved him, that was his special possession, that would be a light to the nations. And they just they copied the politics of other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't really have like,
well, yeah. in yeah. the one yeah. attempt, maybe if you can argue this, the one attempt to make a Christian nation, you know, was Constantine, and people debate him whether or not he's really yeah. was just kind yeah. of using it as leverage. But, you know, first it started with, you know, the Edict of Milan, where it's like, we're going to make, you know, Christianity an accepted religion, which is a major shift.
Yeah.
And then you have it become the Holy Roman Empire, right. where, you know,
And that was the beginning of the decline
right.
of the gospel. And I think that's a perfect example of the spheres of sovereignty getting messed up.
Yeah.
That's where you have church and state. And then what you now had was approved religion and disapproved, mm-hmm. where Christianity actually grew when it was the underdog and when it was persecuted right. and when it was this crazy thing that you would take sacrifice and risk to worship Jesus and to be counted among a community that belongs to Christ by
and
faith.
And so I think something important that comes up here recently, there's been a lot of debate and discussion around the idea of Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
I think we got to be nuanced in that discussion because do we want politicians who are Christians running for office? Yes. I mean, I think we would all agree that if we're followers of Jesus and we have people who are following Jesus and trying to lead from a biblical, ethical, right, standpoint, that's a good thing. But I think that's different than what some people think of Christian nationalism is like, we're going to take over the government mm-hmm. and somehow have this Pax Americana where we're going to, you know, rule basically, and take over as Christians. It's like, oh, I don't know if that worked in Rome.
It's kind of funny you say this, because think about how many Christians how many presidents in the United States history were Christian presidents.
Yeah, I mean, that's
okay. Yeah. Okay. But really what we're talking about is your kind of Christian.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it gets sticky. We're really talking about, you know, it's like, okay, you want to talk about there's presidents who were baptized in the White House. Like like there were some people who had, but really what we're talking about is latching onto a team. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it's dangerous. Like mm-hmm. how great would it be if you have two Christians that you love their faith and they have they set a great example, above reproach, good character, but they have differing views or they're even on differing parties, and you have to actually figure out like what issues you side with and who you're going to vote for based on the problem. Mm. The problem is that we want the person that we agree with, and because it's easier to hitch on to a person than it is actually to like work through.
And that goes back to what you're saying about the policies and the actual substance of arguments versus just identity politics or.
And I think and maybe I'm just really jaded. I think that's just why I'm really leery of someone who claims to be an evangelical Christian running for office. Is not that I don't believe that, I do, but I'm afraid of how they want to use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because again, it's like even the abortion issue, it's like, who would have thunk, right, that the Supreme Court would turn over Roe v. Wade? And we have not been prepared for that to happen, right? Mm-hmm. We haven't. Mm-hmm. But it just goes to show how much I feel like, how many times has some Republican, for example, used pro-life as a virtue signal to try to get me to be on board with them, and they actually did nothing about it.
Right.
Yeah. No one's not. It's like, who's done anything?
Democrats
about
using social justice.
Absolutely.
It's like these are phrases that they know will conjure up votes.
Yeah.
And well, they know the demographics, where they're at, who they've got to get. You know, we hear about the black vote, the Hispanic vote, the Christian vote, the you name it. And so, yeah, it does. Every 4 years, I wonder, you know, am I hearing correctly or am I hearing what they want me to hear? So,
what do you mean by they? I'm a Democrat. Well, no, I'm not.
They, so, I'm not. Meaning I'm not the Democrat. Candidates. Meaning the candidates.
So I think the question that this all brings up is like, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Should we go out and vote?
Yeah.
Should we run for office as Christians? If I'm a Christian, should I engage in the political process? Should I have discussions with people and take a stand on different things? You know, what do you guys think?
Yes, but it's like any good thing can become a bad thing if you have too much of that good thing, right? So maybe the best thing you think of is like sphere sovereignty. You know, first responsibility is to your family. First responsibility to be is probably to your city, right? To your property.
Yeah.
And so I think the idea of focusing more effort local, because then you can actually see what your influence does. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's good.
Where I think a lot of people get sideways because they're focusing on issues that are extremely complicated that you're never going to figure out. I'm sorry. Global warming, climate change, you're going to fix things like that.
Yeah.
You name it. You pick the issue. Yeah. If you, war's going on. It's like there's nothing that you can do that will have any impact. You can't make a dent on anything. So, but yet we're so concerned about it. Mm-hmm. And so what I see is this unhealthy concern over the things that you cannot, that God has not providentially give you any influence over.
Yeah.
And in the process, you ignore the influence that you do have.
Case in point, a lot of politicians will, and even politically active people, I'll just say that, will voice these opinions about things that are global.
Yeah.
But then you look at their local engagement and involvement, and it's worlds apart.
Right.
And so I think case in point, why don't we have integrity and start with what we can control in our local environment, even beginning with our family, and be good stewards there and work out from there. And if God would open doors for engagement or involvement in larger theaters of action, then great. But chances are, you know, 98% of us are going to be engaged locally. Yeah. We're voting. We're talking to friends. We're engaged in conversations. And that's where we can make a difference.
Yeah, I think obviously, for me, I think we all need to be voting. We all need to be involved in what's going on politically. You know, take the abortion. That's the biggest one probably right now nationwide. And now that has gone from the federal government to the state, now it's becoming a huge issue in each individual state. So I think coming down to that local level really is important. And I think I think it's important that we're involved in politics, that we understand what's going on in our nation, in our state, in our counties, and our local government. But ultimately, I think it comes down to our faith has to be in Christ. I know that there are a lot of people that are really involved in politics to the point where it's almost like politics is going to save us.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it becomes dangerous for the believer, is that we can get so involved in these issues that we forget who's really in control, because all through Scripture we see that God puts these people in power, even the bad ones, you know. And we see that God always has his will. He uses those positions. You know, I think if we continue to turn our back as a nation on God, it may come down to, you've seen it, Dave, in your missionary work, that, you know, we look at communist China right now, and that the church there, from all accounts, is thriving in a nation that where it's not allowed, you're not allowed to profess Christ. And I think it bothers me a bit that we may end up in that situation where we've turned our backs on God as a nation, and it's the true church that's going to really come together and thrive. So I guess that's a long-winded answer to, yes, I believe in voting and making sure that we're voting people into offices from local government to federal government that has all those moral principles, those biblical backgrounds. If we can get someone in there that way, that's great. But ultimately, I think, you know, when our candidate doesn't win, it's not the end of the world for 4 years or whatever, because God is still in control, and God can use those positions, whether we agree with the person in control or not. Mm-hmm.
So it's a win-win. The kingdom's going to win. You're not going to mess it up.
Absolutely.
And what Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow,
yeah,
applies so much to politics. It's like, do your research, be involved, but how much stress is just dumped over issues that you have one vote for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let the one vote be relative. Like, you know, the influence of your one vote, maybe let it be proportional to like how much stress you're going to experience over. Yeah. In the end of the day, Christianity does really well as a minority, so it's a win-win either way, man. King's going
to
win.
And I don't want to dismiss the importance of vote, the one vote.
Yeah,
I think it is important for us to go out and vote. I'm not saying that at all, but I think sometimes, myself included, sometimes in those years where there's so much on the line politically, I get so involved and so I can, you know, you get on social media and start reading different views and you can't help but get fired up. And I'm like, God's in control, you know, let me do my part, but let me rest on him knowing that he's in control, regardless of what the outcome is.
I think what you're both saying is it boils down to perspective,
yeah,
right? What is our perspective and who is our God?
Yeah.
So we recognize that there's consequences for political engagement. Like, absolutely. It does affect our life. Yeah. I mean, we believe that. And we've been blessed in this country to have freedoms and to gather together on a Sunday morning and worship. And we don't want to take that for granted.
Yeah.
So I think we need to pursue political action that would further that along and continue to give us that kind of freedom. But we have perspective to recognize that, you know, Jesus is going to build his church. You know, he's going to build his kingdom. It's okay if we suffer because he knows what we need. We don't want to, we're not going to go pursue it, but if it comes, we're able to navigate it.
Yeah.
And to live as Christ, to die as gain.
Amen. So it's a great way to end. Listen, if you got some views that you want to share, drop them in the comments or email us and let us know on social media. Let's get a conversation started, not only about this topic, but all the topics that we discuss. We'd love to have your input and to hear from you as well. So stick around, and we will be back next week talking about something else. Have a great day.